We know now that in the early years of the 20th century, this world was being watched closely by intelligences greater than man's, and yet as mortal as his own. We know now that as human beings busied themselves about their various concerns, they were scrutinized and studied, perhaps almost as narrowly as a man with a microscope might scrutinize the transient creatures that swarm and multiply in a drop of water. With infinite complacence, people went to and fro over the earth about their little affairs, serene in the assurance of their dominion over this small, spinning fragment of solar driftwood, which by chance or design, man has inherited out of the dark mystery of time and space.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
You have tuned into the WGXC Morning Show. I'm Tom Rowe in Acre. And this hour, we're going to hear about wage theft in New York. Allegedly, billions of dollars a year are stolen by businesses from low-income New Yorkers. And a bill has failed to pass in Albany to address the issue. We're going to hear about the story from WOOC's Mark Dunley this hour. Plus, we'll hear the national headlines from the Public News Service and the local Better Weather from the Catskill Makers Syndicate. All starts after the local news, which is next on the WGXC Morning Show. Stay tuned.
Controlled on air, in air, channel connection, and the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. This is the network, network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network, network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network.
You are listening to WGXC Acre, hands-on creative community radio at 90.7 FM and streaming live online at WGXC.org. WGXC is a program division of Wave Farm.
Wave Farm's public art park begins opening Saturdays on June 3rd for drop-in visits anytime between noon and 6 p.m. The art park is on Wave Farm's 29-acre campus in Acre, featuring 13 installations. The study center, including a research library, the WGXC 90.7 FM Acre broadcast studio, and accommodations for Wave Farm's International Artist Residency Program. Visitors to Wave Farm's art park receive a guided tour of the campus. Admission is free, and tours typically last between 60 and 90 minutes. The art park is available to see on other days through October through reservations at wavefarm.org.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by Sun Common, supporting vibrant communities across New York for over 15 years, offering custom solar installations for homes, farms, and businesses. Information at suncommon.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Kyle of Athens, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about Creative Community Radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate. Thank you for your support.
I'm Tom Rowan Acre with the WGXC Daily News for Friday, September 1st. Go to the WGXC newsroom at wgxc.org for more information about any of these stories. Rachel Silberstein reports in the Times Union that local elected officials are upset about a survey conducted by a firm hired by St. Peter's Health Partners to hear about the impact of the proposed closure of their hospital system's birth center. They say it was confusingly worded, not widely publicized, and only available for a short time. Closing the Burdett Birthing Center in Troy would leave no birth services in Rensselaer County, while Columbia and Greene counties also lack any birthing centers. Columbia Memorial Health in Hudson gave up hosting birthing mothers in 2019. Assemblymember John T. McDonald and Troy Mayor Patrick Madden want more opportunities for public input on the proposed closure of the Burdett Birthing Center in Troy. Madden said, quote, "During the first of its kind health equity impact assessment, it is important for the state to establish precedent for what constitutes an appropriate standard for robust community engagement. I am not impressed with the way they have conducted this community survey," unquote. Officials from St. Peter say the birthing center has been losing $2.3 million annually and duplicates services offered at the health system's nearby Albany location. But while another hospital may be fairly close, anyone taking public transportation from many parts of Rensselaer County have a long trip. McDonald and Madden wrote in a joint letter to State Health Commissioner James V. McDonald saying, quote, "There must be additional opportunities for the public to provide input on this proposed closure plan. And we urge the Department of Health to engage with us to solicit this community input for the inclusion of the health equity impact assessment," unquote. Read the full story in the Times Union. Liz Montgomery reports for Porcupine Soup that New York senior Senator Chuck Schumer wants the railroad company CSX to stop the gray liquid leaking from its train bridge over Mansion Street in Coxsackie. At the bridge August 30th with local officials, Schumer called the leak a, quote, "long-standing safety concern," unquote, and called the unknown substance leaking, quote, "potentially dangerous," unquote. Last April, Coxsackie Mayor Mark Evans said, quote, "Within a few days of seeing it, I reached out to my contact at CSX, who responded promptly in three emails over more than a week and a half, but never indicated when the issue would be resolved, despite me telling him this needs an immediate response," unquote. Eventually, a CSX crew looked at the issue, with Schumer saying, quote, "Although CSX initially responded by placing plastic culvert pipes cut in half to replace the original 1930 steel drains, the new installation only diverted the water to the sidewalk, leaving it wet and slick and creating yet another safety issue for residents in the village," unquote. Evans says it was not the only issue with the bridge. Quote, "About 6 years ago, a piece of concrete fell off the bridge, and a couple of weeks later, they came to check the bridge, declaring it safe. Several years ago, a bunch of dirt and gravel came off the embankment in a rainstorm, and it took them a week to clean it up, all the time declaring it was not actually their responsibility," unquote, Evans said. Quote, "We will continue to keep the pressure on to get this resolved," unquote. CSX previously reported that the liquid leaking from the bridge was mud. Now CSX spokesman Brian Tucker said, quote, "CSX teams will return to the bridge to see what else can be done to address the concerns expressed by Senator Schumer," unquote. Read more about this story in Porcupine Soup. Justin Velasquez reports for New York State of Politics, which is now September, and that means cigarettes cost an extra dollar a pack. The additional tax goes into effect September 1st, makes New York one of the most expensive places in the nation to buy cigarettes, with taxes now at $5.35 a pack. The Center for Disease Control says smoking-related illnesses are the leading cause of preventable death in the United States. A World Health Organization study reports a 10% increase in tobacco prices leads to about a 4% decrease in consumption in high-income countries. Megan Hallahan, a public health educator for tobacco-free Central New York, said, quote, "That's making it harder for kids to be able to afford buying these products, so it's going to make it less likely that they'll experiment with tobacco products. If kids don't start smoking during youth, then hopefully they won't grow into adults who smoke," unquote. Read more about this story at New York State of Politics, and read more about any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom at wgxc.org.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Friday, September 1st. Local early morning temperatures range from 44 degrees in Steventown to 49 in Skodak. And that is it. We have solidly broken 50 degrees overnight. That means it's now warm fall. So enjoy this month, because after that, chances for snow come back. Regional average soil temperature is 67 degrees. Pollen levels for today will be medium, and we can expect a steady decline from here on out. Overnight temperatures can greatly affect daytime pollen production. This morning, calm conditions could generate some patchy fog. Winds start moving by 10 a.m., dispelling any remaining mist. We get a high of 77 at 5 p.m. Looking just beautiful again today. Overnight, we dip to 52 degrees, then bounce back up to 81 degrees tomorrow afternoon. Cloud cover will increase as the day progresses. 60 degrees overnight takes us into a pretty warm and sunny Sunday with a high of 87. Monday, still up there hitting 89 degrees. Today's tide schedule is high tide at 4:18 a.m., low tide at 11:05 a.m., high tide again at 4:50 p.m., and low tide once again at 11:26 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 72 degrees. The tide strength will be high. Sunset today will be at 7:18 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 6:17 a.m. Looking way up, we see the sun is getting active again, hitting us with M-class flares and tossing Hadouken left and right. Still waiting to see if anything major is coming our way. Remember, we don't have a perfect view of these things and can be sideswiped at a moment's notice. Plasma winds will be slow at 389 kilometers per second with an average density of 5 protons per cubic centimeter. Radio propagation conditions are currently fair below 4 megahertz till dark, then fair across the board overnight. There are no chances of aurora this evening. The current sunspot number is 77, and this has been the Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
No sports, no rock, no information for mindless chatter. We're your station.
Bye. Last night, I congratulated Donald Trump and offered to work with him on behalf of our country.
I have just called President Obama to congratulate him on his victory.
I had the honor of calling Senator Barack Obama to congratulate him. Please.
I spoke to President Bush and I offered him and Laura our congratulations on their victory.
Now the U.S. Supreme Court has spoken. While I strongly disagree with the court's decision, I accept it.
The president is my opponent, not my enemy, and I wish him well and I pledge my support.
And America must always come first, so we will get behind this new president and wish him well.
This nation faces major challenges ahead, and we must work together.
He has won. We are all Americans. He is our president.
In bringing about an orderly transition of government in the weeks ahead.
I congratulate you on your victory.
Congratulations on your victory.
We've got a president-elect. He's going to have my help. Cheers.
I have no bitterness, no rancor at all.
He will have my wholehearted support and yours.
The people have rendered their verdict, and I gladly accept it.
I urge all Americans to unite behind you.
And every good American will wholeheartedly accept the will of the people.
I accept the result of the election with complete goodwill.
This is an embarrassment to our country. We were getting ready to win this election. Frankly, we did win this election.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
You know, these are the distractions that get you to lose elections. The last time we were talking about special sessions here in the state of Georgia, just a few weeks later, the Republican majority lost two U.S. Senate races.
Georgia Governor Brian Kemp dismissed GOP calls for a special legislative session which would seek to impeach Fulton County District Attorney Fannie Willis after former President Donald Trump and 18 co-defendants were indicted on felony charges for their efforts to overturn the 2020 election. Trump pleaded not guilty on Thursday to the criminal charges he faces in Georgia, meaning he won't make a court appearance next week. The Biden administration has proposed a new rule that expands background check requirements for firearm dealers. Sellers online or at gun shows would be required to be licensed and conduct background checks on buyers. White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre calls the move an effective tool to reduce gun violence.
This administration respects the right of responsible gun owners while also believing Americans have the right to live free from gun violence as well. Those two things can exist.
The proposed rule will go through the federal rulemaking process and comes as the country continues to endure increased gun violence. Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas had reported taking three private jet trips courtesy of right-wing billionaire Harlan Crow last year. Thomas has been at the center of increasing ethical concerns. Last month at a legal conference in Oregon, Justice Elena Kagan said Congress does have some authority to oversee the court's policies.
Congress should have, you know, the right to consider for itself what it thinks constitutionally appropriate and otherwise appropriate.
Senate Democrats continue to push for legislation that would require a code of ethics for the court, which most Republicans oppose. The ACLU of Montana is supporting a lawsuit to overturn a ban on TikTok. Montana was the first state to effectively outlaw the app when it passed legislation in the spring. The legal director of the Montana chapter of the ACLU, Alex Raitt, calls the move a violation of Montanans' right to free speech.
In order for a democracy to function, individuals need an unabridged right to speak. And when the legislature or the government decides to restrict those ways that we can speak with one another, that violates our constitutional rights.
The Texas Supreme Court allowed a new law that prohibits most gender-affirming care for minors in the state to take effect today. Last week, a state district judge ruled the law violated rights of transgender children and their families and issued a temporary injunction. Democratic Texas Representative John Rosenthal opposed Senate Bill 14 and calls trans rights human rights.
The bill and the false negative and rhetoric around it politicizes kids who are often fragile and at a delicate juncture in their life.
I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our A-Trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people.
We're revisiting a complicated and expanding story from July involving alleged sketchy behavior from groups hoping to repeal ranked choice voting in Alaska. In July, Alaska Public Media reported that pro-ranked choice Alaskans for Better Elections filed a campaign finance complaint against anti-ranked choice group Ranked Choice Education Association, registered as a nonprofit, quote, integrated auxiliary of a church. That group later made a political donation to Alaskans for Honest Elections, organizing the initiative to repeal RCV. The church's pastor is both president of the Ranked Choice Education Association and a director for Alaskans for Honest Elections. An investigation by the Alaska Public Offices Commission is ongoing. Then August 25th, the Alaska Beacon reported that the commission staff issued a recommendation in another case involving a separate anti-RCV nonprofit. Preserve Democracy was founded by Kelly Chewbacca, a 2022 U.S. Senate challenger to Senator Lisa Murkowski. Alaskans for Better Elections complained that Chewbacca's nonprofit lobbied legislators and accepted political donations without filing the required paperwork or reports. Preserve Democracy has been cleared of the illegal lobbying, but the commission staff recommended fines of over $16,000 for its lack of financial disclosures. We have more on this convoluted story at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Would you like to do a show on WGXC?
Would you like to do a show on WGXC?
Would you like to do a show on WGXC?
Would you like to do a show?
Would you like to do a show?
Chocolate pigs are awesome.
I turned it down.
The only dogs can hear.
I turned it down.
Did you hear that?
No.
Next on the WGXC community radio station, we're going to hear from Gary's Dream, a band based in the Catskills, with a new album out in 2023. The band consists of Aviva Sky on vocals, Shelby Serrano on drums, Wesley Harper on keyboards, and synth and Ryan Serrano on guitar. Here is the band Gary's Dream and their song To the Moon on WGXC 90.7 FM.
To the moon.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
Wage theft is a major problem in New York State. Prior reports have indicated that at least $1 billion a year is stolen from particularly low-income workers' paychecks. There was a recent article that shows that collections under the Hochul administration is even worse than under the Cuomo administration. Of the $1 billion a year that is stolen, the state only returns about $20 million to low-income workers. We are joined by Jihai Song with En Masse National Mobilization Against Sweatshop, and Gonzalo Cruz with the Don Bosco Workers. What is the present situation? I know there was a sweat bill to try to deal with the wage theft problem. For some reason, that's not passing the state legislature after years of efforts. Why can't we get more progress on wage theft?
So for folks that don't know, the sweat bill is a bill that workers across New York State have been trying to pass for years that would address the heart of what we see as the cause of wage theft, which is that there is no consequences basically for bosses. And that comes down to workers not being able to collect on their stolen wages, even if they win a judgment in their court, even if the Department of Labor takes up their case and finds that the boss is guilty. There's so many different ways for bosses to hide their money, drag it out, delay, and basically never have to pay a cent of what they're owed, of what they owe their workers. And so as a result, wage theft just continues and continues. And what we're seeing is that really, despite the whole state and workers across the state clamoring for change, clamoring for an end to wage theft, they're being blocked really just by one restaurant lobby here in New York City called the New York City Hospitality Alliance that is very powerful up in Albany and is basically preventing justice for workers across the state.
Now, Gonzalo, you're up there in Westchester. You know, what has been some of your experience with the wage theft issue?
You know, we got very good laws in Westchester and New York State. We got the Wage Theft Prevention Act. They passed in 2011, but unfortunately, they can reinforce, like a lot of people, they store, they don't get paid. They give out checks to the workers. And we got a really, really bad experience when we submit cases to the government. Even the Attorney General Office, we submit cases. And sometimes the companies, they be in bankruptcy. So we can collect the money for the workers. And we can see we got the best laws in New York City, but we need to make sure we need to reinforce these laws too. So that's why we are fighting with sweat bill from like 8 years ago. We are fighting for sweat bill to pass at the state level. We advocate for that legislation.
Now, I know one of the problems when Governor Cuomo was in office, he actually instructed the Department of Labor to go easy on business. He wanted to be seen as pro-business rather than pro-labor. Has that changed much now that Governor Hochul is, you know, now running the state?
I'd say, unfortunately, no. At least from our perspective, we've not seen a huge difference in the amount of workers getting robbed and unfortunately seeing no consequences come to their boss. The Department of Labor actually has been closing cases for home attendants that work 24-hour shifts and were only paid for 13 hours. So millions and millions of dollars these women are owed, mostly women are owed, for their unpaid work. The department have been investigating these cases under Cuomo and then suddenly did an about face and started closing all of them. So home attendants are protesting and filing lawsuits against that. But no, I would say that that Hochul's administration has not been less business friendly, if anything, but judging by just this example, more friendly towards business to health insurance companies, to big corporations.
Now, you mentioned that the restaurants are, you know, part of the culprits lobbying against the bill, and you also mentioned home workers. What are some of the other low-income workers that really see a lot of wage theft problems?
We can see in construction, hospitality, domestic workers, and home attendants. So we see in different sectors, but most of I can say is in construction. The second is maybe hospitality and domestic workers or home attendants. And here in Port Chester, last year we got from September 2020 to August 2023, we get 37 cases in Port Chester. And the first is like construction, hospitality, and domestic workers. So when we see our governor, Hoko, she said like, welcome to new immigrants, but really the minimum wage, some people, they make $10 an hour in restaurants. And when she say like, oh, a small business, we can help to a small business. Yeah, but we need to make sure they make the at least the minimum wage, you know, like $15 an hour. Some people, they make $10 an hour.
So and it's just to add, yes. I just wanted to add that it isn't just immigrant workers, and it's not even just low wage service workers. Mm-hmm. That we need office workers, you know, retail, you know, front of house, workers of all kinds that are getting robbed, warehouse workers, all sorts. We had Teamsters testifying at a public hearing on wage theft, saying that they also experience wage theft. So it's not just low wage industries as well. And then I do just also want to say that wage theft is bad for small businesses. If you're a business owner that is following the law, you're getting screwed over by your competition if they're breaking the law. If they can undercut you, if they can lower their prices because they're not paying their workers, it really hurts honest business owners that do want to, you know, give back to their community, be part of their community, and really just follow the law. It hurts small business owners too.
Now, I remember, I think it was the last year that Governor Cuomo was in office. We actually passed the sweat bill, but the Governor Cuomo vetoed it on New Year's Day itself, which is the last day he could have vetoed it. What has the legislature been doing the last couple of years to try to get this bill across the finish line?
Well, so sweat, I believe, passed the assembly last year and then didn't make it through the Senate. And then this year, the Senate Senator Ramos, the sponsor, did hold a public hearing on the bill. But I think really what we've seen is that we have lots and lots of sponsors, lots and lots of elected officials saying, yes, we support you, we support workers, no more wage theft. But when push comes to shove, they fall in line with the talking points of their lobbyist friends, or they fall in line with the political pressure exerted by people like Melba Wilson, who's the president of the Hospitality Alliance, her political allies in Albany. So really, I think to get this bill passed, we need to put pressure on our elected officials, we need to put pressure on the governor, and we need to say, like, we don't want you listening to these people who protect sweatshop bosses anymore. This is unacceptable. You have to pass sweat. You have to do it now.
Now, since a lot of these people are low-income workers, I imagine, you know, wage theft really makes it hard for them to support themselves and their family. Is that true?
Yes, I do imagine. Sometimes we got single moms in our communities. They make the minimum wage. They don't have money to pay rent if they don't get checks for 1 week or 2 weeks, and they don't have funding to bring food to the table. Even now, the after school programs, they charge you. In Port Chester, people say like, oh, and I make $15 an hour, I can make it. They can survive, you know. People, they need to work like 12, 13 hours a day, because the salary is really, really low. And you imagine, at the end of the week, you don't get paid for 2 weeks or 1 month. That's really hard for people.
So we only have 30 seconds left. Been talking with Gonzalo Cruz and Jihan Song. People want more information, help out. How best can they do that?
Well, they can check out, at least for NMAS, we have a website, nmass.org, NMASS.org. You can find all the contact information there. Gonzalo, you have the info for Don Bosco.
Yeah, you can go to www.donboscoworkersinc.com in Port Chester, New York. We can help people to recover the salaries and help people. Yes.
Thank you very much. And this has been Mark Dunley for the Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
Louis Pugh, an endurance swimmer and ocean advocate and UNEP patron of the oceans, is swimming the length of the Hudson. Riverkeeper, one of the many organizations who do the work of keeping the Hudson River healthy, is being highlighted along the route. We are now joined by Dan Shapley, Senior Director of Advocacy Policy Planning at Riverkeeper. Welcome. Dan, can you begin by giving a brief overview of the important work that Riverkeeper is doing?
Sure. Riverkeeper has been around now for close to 60 years. We started as a group of fishermen on the Hudson River back in the 60s when there was egregious pollution of the Hudson happening from industrial polluters. And at that time, our founder, Bob Boyle, discovered a law that had been little used but outlawed dumping in navigable waters. So a small group of active citizens who were angry at the conditions that they found in the river used that law to go against polluters and effectively stopped a lot of that egregious pipe pollution even before the Clean Water Act had been passed. We continue that kind of work today by using the law wherever we can to enforce our environmental laws and to empower citizens to do so. And we also have a boat on the water to empower us to give the perspective of the water and the river to decision makers and to others so that they can kind of understand the issues and act on them. And then we really focus on using science through water quality monitoring and habitat restoration to improve conditions in the Hudson and for both humans ourselves who rely on the river for drinking water or for recreation and for all of the many forms of life that call it home in that vast ecosystem in the river.
That's amazing. Really important work that you're doing. Can you dive a little bit deeper into how your role as senior director fits into all of that?
Sure. Well, what I do is I get involved in a number of our priority projects in helping to develop strategies that can affect decision makers. I mean, we're a nonprofit organization that works with volunteers and has members, but we don't have any power on our own. Our power comes from finding ways to get people to use their voices and to use the legal processes that are available in order to have the decision makers, those people who are in power, make good decisions. And that essentially is the heart of what we do, is try to figure out how to engage people to use their voices effectively and strategically to achieve the best results we can to improve the environment around us.
Now, Riverkeeper is hosting Louis' stop in Troy as he swims along the river. What is important to know about this portion of the Hudson River specifically?
Well, this portion of the Hudson River is just extraordinary. It's the point where the estuary, which is that tidal portion of the river that extends from the Atlantic Ocean all the way up to the dam at Troy, so it's the northernmost point of that estuary where we have tidal influence from the Atlantic Ocean, and we're directly connected to the ocean. That means all of the life in that river is connected to the ocean. The fish that are spawning in the spring in Troy, even in the small creeks like the Winanskill, are at this time of year in the fall headed out back into the ocean, and they're feeding the whales that you can see breaching off of the coast of New York City in these extraordinary photos or these whale watching trips that are now occurring. So it's this it's that point in the estuary. It's also the point where the Mohawk River, the largest tributary of the Hudson, joins the Hudson, and the Mohawk River is an extraordinary river on its own, as well as been made into a canal, as has the Upper Hudson River. So these canals also provide, unfortunately, a pathway for invasive species to enter both directions, well, to go both directions. And invasive species can really disrupt the ecosystem as it exists today and cause some of those native fish and other creatures to really suffer, can change to water quality. And we've seen that most recently with the invasion of a fish called the round goby. Mm-hmm. And it's something that we're trying to prevent future invasions through that that pathway of the canal and to preserve the local ecosystem. And these things really connect with the swim in a way, because the source to sea swimmer that you mentioned is drawing attention to the Hudson as an example for what rivers are facing worldwide. And freshwater ecosystems around the world are the most imperiled type of ecosystem that there is. The biodiversity loss in freshwater ecosystems is greater than any other type. So when we're talking about protecting the Hudson and seeing it as an example, it's really emblematic of some of the challenges that are faced by other rivers around the world.
Wow. And so the canal aspect, is that also what is contributing to the harmful algae blooms?
Well, fortunately, the Hudson River itself is buffered from having harmful algae blooms because of the tides and because of the mixing that results as a consequence of them. And in fact, rivers typically are less vulnerable to harmful algal blooms than lakes because they're flowing. The still water that can happen in lakes and occurs in lakes and reservoirs is one of the conditions that allows for the formation of algae. And you're exactly right. On the a river like the Mohawk River that has dams and has locks, so that you have really kind of created a series of lakes out of the river, there is a greater risk of harmful algal blooms in those conditions. And in fact, the town of Colony and the city of Cohoes rely on the Mohawk River as their drinking water source. And so the concern about the future risk of harmful algal blooms is really important in a place like the Mohawk River, where if that type of algae that can produce toxins would form, it would put the water at risk for 100,000 people or so.
So you and I know that the health of the river is really important to our community, but what should residents understand, particularly people that don't necessarily go to the river or understand how accessible it is?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, one of the things that's changed over the last 30 years is that we do have a lot more access to the river. What we see, for instance, Troy at the Ingalls Avenue boat launch, that was only built, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago or so. And before that, there wasn't that kind of access where a boater could put a boat in the river or a kayaker could put a kayak in the river. But we also see is that type of access point is not serving the neighborhood around it well at all, because that community could use all kinds of great access to the river, but not for boating, right? There's not a lot of people who have boats who are in that community. So the right access for the right community is still a struggle, is still a challenge for the river, even though we do have more of it. In the whole Capital District, it's one of the portions of the river that's the most challenged for water quality, because all of the communities, Troy, Rensselaer, Albany, Watervliet, Cohoes, Green Island, rely on what are called combined sewers that carry both the sewage from our toilets in dry weather to the treatment plants, which is what we want to see happen, get that treated before the wastewater is discharged to the river in a cleaned up condition. But those same pipes also carry stormwater, which is what flows into the off of the street into the storm drains that you see on the sidewalk. So when all of that rainwater enters the same pipes, it causes the sewage to overflow without having been treated. And so that happens at over 90 locations in the Capital District, making that part of the river after rain frequently unsafe for recreation. And there is work being done to reduce those overflows, which is good. It is long and expensive work, but it will be a long time still before we could, really get out of the river what we should, which is every community should be able to swim in the river. They should be able to have a floating pool or a beach. They should be able to cool off there. We have way too few places already where people can access safe swimming. It's going to be increasingly important that we have those places to cool off, especially as the climate continues to warm. So it's really, clean water is an important climate issue as well.
And so we are running out of time. We have about 30 seconds left. So can you talk about what's happening on Thursday?
So at 11 a.m. at the Ingalls Avenue boat launch, Lewis Pugh, who is the swimmer for the UN, drawing attention to rivers worldwide, but with his swim down the river, will be exiting the river, and people are welcome to come at that time and meet him and talk with Riverkeeper and the Media Sanctuary and others who will be in attendance about issues facing the river and about how we're trying to address them. And so we'd love to see anyone who's interested come down and join us.
Thank you so much for your time today. That was Dan Shapley of Riverkeeper, and I'm Elisha Bacon, a community organizer and Water Justice Lab media mentor, reporting for Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. Brendan J. Lyons reports in the Times Union that Governor Kathy Hochul went to the White House August 30th to talk with President Joe Biden's chief of staff, Jeff Zients, about the migrants other states have been busing to New York. Recently, Hochul, New York City Mayor Eric Adams, and White House officials have pointed at each other, discussing blame for how the issue has been handled. And Hochul said last week, and I quote, "We cannot and will not force other parts of our state to shelter migrants," end quote, despite the Statue of Liberty in the New York Harbor welcoming migrants to the state and the country. U.S. Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro N. Mayorkas suggested three sites in Schenectady County and the remote Messina International Airport in St. Lawrence County near the Canadian border as places to house migrants in an August 27th letter. Representative Elise Stefanik did not like that, saying, and I quote, "Upstate New York and the North Country is not a sanctuary city. We should not have to bear the cost of Joe Biden, Kathy Hochul, and Eric Adams' far-left open border policies and the havoc they are causing." I call on President Biden to end his radical open border policies and secure our northern and southern borders, end quote. In reality, Biden's border policy is not very different from the former Republican president's policy. About Hochul's main request to let migrants work, Mayorkas said there are, and I quote, statutory constraints, end quote, that prevent individuals who have applied for asylum to get work authorization in the U.S. any earlier. Mayorkas said, and I quote, we are exploring all options available to improve operational efficiency, including through additional staffing and technology improvements to streamline case processing, as well as improved methods of communicating information about the employment authorization process with non-citizens, end quote. Read more about this story in the Times Union. Tim Williams and Marcia Jacquez report for New York State of Politics that New York's Attorney General announced this week that New York and more than 20 other states reached an updated $12.5 billion settlement with the company 3M for their role contaminating drinking water sources with a forever chemical known as PFAS. Robert Hayes, director of Clean Water for Environmental Advocates New York, said, and I quote, so many drinking water sources in New York and across the country are contaminated by these chemicals and are putting New Yorkers' health at risk when they put on the tap, end quote. They are called forever chemicals because they take so long to break down. PFAS can also build up in the body and cause health issues such as cancer. The Environmental Protection Agency issued drinking water standard proposals earlier this year, which said there is no safe level of PFAS. The EPA also proposed a cleanup standard of 4 parts per trillion, which is lower than New York State standard of 10 parts per trillion. Read more about this story at New York State of Politics. Larry DiDonato reports for Porcupine Soup that Dutchman's Landing boat ramp in Catskill is closing Tuesday, September 5th, so it can be replaced. It will be unavailable until the first couple of weeks in November. Local boaters who want to get on the Hudson River will need to use nearby ramps in Athens, Coxsackie, or Germantown. The Catskill boat launch will be closed for the beginning of duck season in the southeastern zone, which opens on October 21st and closes on December 3rd. Catskill is spending $290,000 in taxpayer money to Flanch Industries of Selkirk to replace the boat launch. And you can read more about this story in Porcupine Soup. And that wraps up the WGXC News Update. You can visit our website at WGXC.org for local weather updates, public meetings, a community calendar, or COVID-19 updates. And while you're there, please click on the donate button to become a WGXC sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a pleasant tomorrow. And now, here is your WGXC weather update. Your forecast for the next 2 days, well, on Friday, it will be sunny with a high near 75 degrees. On Friday night, it will be mostly clear with a temperature low of around 53 degrees. And on Saturday, it will be mostly sunny with a temperature high near 80 degrees. And on Saturday night, mostly cloudy with a temperature low of around 60 degrees. And that is your weather update from WGXC, 90.7 FM, Radio for Open Ears, in Greene and Columbia Counties. We'll be right back.
Next, we hear from British radio artist Scanner with his 2022 track Air in the Air from the Homeland of Electricity album.